You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Picture this scene. You go to a diner or a bar, and you know pretty much everyone there, and they know you. You know, you can just show up, no premeditation or planning, and find a community of people to hang out with. Maybe even yell out your name, like in the 80s sitcom Cheers, when Norm walks in.
Our next guest says that that type of community meeting space used to be the norm, but it's been dying a long, slow death, and nothing has really emerged to take its place. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have that kind of place today, where everybody knows your name and you can count on going there to have good conversations? What do you think we're missing out on? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Dean Barker joins us now. He's editor at Gadgetopia and director of business development at Blend Interactive. His piece on the death of the American watering hole was on boingboing.com. We've got it linked, by the way, on the Central Time Facebook page. Dean, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So paint us a picture of what the classic watering hole might work like.
Well, you know, I think it's been popularized. I'm 43, right? So I was a child of the 80s, and I think it's really been popularized by sitcoms. I think that most sitcoms had that kind of central watering hole where people would gather, and it was a place really just ripe for situation comedy, so it was a really, really great script device. The piece that I wrote, I originally wrote as kind of an homage to a great book by a guy named Ray Oldenburg. Ray Oldenburg is a professor emeritus at the University of Western Florida. And he was in the sociology department, and he had written a book called The Great Good Place, which was about what he called the third place. Everybody has home and everybody has work, but we don't have this third place that we can go to. And he described in there this place that I immediately hit on as kind of the setting for most of the action in the sitcoms that I grew up with. And the idea that Oldenburg put forth is that there was some kind of neutral place that existed for conversation and was accessible, and it had a group of regulars that met there and was a place that you could relax away from the stress of home or the stress of work and kind of collaborate and communicate with people. And I think that's really in decline across the country, and there are a number of different reasons for that. But
it seems like that kind of place that you just described existed pretty well in the 40s, the 50s, but in recent times, did we really have third places that functioned like that, you know, with the exception of TV?
You know, I think that we probably did up until the 80s and the 90s, but it, like I put forth in the piece, I think that the decline of the third place has really corresponded with the rise of the internet and the rise of social networking in particular. I think in large part that has really killed the third place. We don't necessarily go to a physical place to interact with physical people anymore. We simply go online. We've developed online communities that have really become proxies for physical places we used to go to.
Well, I think we still have bars, obviously, lots of them here in Wisconsin. We've got coffee shops, lots of them in some areas. But you're making the case, I think, that they're not doing the same job. Why is it? Is it because we, you know, when we go to these places, if we're meeting people, we've planned it, we're not just seeing who's there?
Yeah, I think that's really it. You know, you bring up the coffee shop, and I mentioned the coffee shop in the piece. I don't know about you, but I don't really go to a coffee shop and identify with regulars there. If you go to a coffee shop now, everybody tends to be heads down in their screens working. And I'm reminded just last month, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she had a birthday party. And I thought, oh, it's going to be crazy. There's going to be little girls bouncing off the walls. And it was very quiet downstairs, and so I went down into the basement, and I was confronted with four 13-year-old girls all staring into four separate screens. And I mean, this is really what it's become. And if you go into a coffee shop, being in a coffee shop without some kind of electronic device is a little weird. I mean, what would you be doing? Just sitting there drinking coffee, staring at the wall? I mean, who does that? And I think this is, we've come full circle where it used to be odd if you were to go in there and you would isolate yourself in some kind of device. Now I think it's odd if you go in there and you don't.
What are we trading there when we go online, we go to the coffee shop, we go on our device, and maybe we're on Facebook or something where we're having a kind of conversation versus just going in and talking to people? What's the trade-off?
You know, I've written before on the idea of asynchronous communication, and I think asynchronous communication, the idea of communication where you say something in some kind of online medium, and then I go away and give it some thought, and I form a response, and we have this kind of asynchronous communication. I think it's very valuable in a business and professional sense, but it's not nearly as spontaneous as face-to-face communication. And I think we lose something in spontaneity and passion. I mean, if you and I are going face-to-face and having an argument about something, I think it's a much, much different dynamic than if we have this kind of cold, calculating war of the keyboards, so to speak. I was talking to a college president that I know, and I think this is paralleled by the rise of online education, which I'm certainly not against, and there's absolutely a place for online education. But at the same time, I remember being in a college class. I was a political science major back in the 90s. I remember being in a class, and one of my professors, his method of teaching was to throw out an inflammatory statement and just let us argue about it back and forth. And it was wonderful, and it was very, very foundational for my skills as a communicator and skills I later developed as a professional. And you really lose that. And the New York Times did an article on online education. They said the student that's really attracted to online education in many cases is the student that really needs to be in a classroom and really needs to be arguing with people and going face-to-face and developing these communication and real-time analytical skills, which I think we lose to some extent.
We hear sometimes about a great sort going on in American culture where we voluntarily segregate ourselves, surround ourselves with people of the same opinions as us, people we hang out with, people we're online with. Would these watering holes be a solution to that? It's whoever shows up and you're talking to the regulars there and maybe you'll meet people radically different than yourself?
Oh, I think so. You're really preaching to the choir here. Because one of my favorite books of the last few years has been a book called The Filter Bubble. And it was written by a guy who started MoveOn. Eli is his first name. His last name escapes me. But he wrote this wonderful book called The Filter Bubble. And he says the Internet is such a unique communication medium in that it's not like radio, where radio just goes out as is to everybody. The Internet is intelligent and can form fit and adapt the information it communicates to you based on your behavior. And we're all starting to live in filter bubbles now. We've configured the Internet in such a way that it tells us what we like to hear. And he talked about Facebook's newsfeed. You know, I'm a Democrat, and if I have a bunch of liberal friends on Facebook and I click on their links, I'm probably going to start to see more liberal things appear in my Facebook feed because Facebook says, well, this is the thing that he likes and we want to make him happy, so we're going to feed him these things. And there's all sorts of, you know, Google. If you Google for something and I Google for the exact same term, we might get different results because Google is going to cater the results to what it knows about us. And so we're living in these filter bubbles where the information we receive from the Internet is filtered just to the information that makes us happy. And I think that when you real-time communication, it's kind of the roll of the dice. You take what you get, and you may sit down with somebody who has vastly different opinions than you. My son is in college. He's a sophomore in college now, and he wanted to move home. And I told him, I said, I'm against you moving home. I want you to go live in a confined space with people you may not agree with. I want you to learn how to get along with people, learn how to argue with people, learn how to have a conversation with somebody and still respect their position and respect them as a person. I think there's huge interpersonal skills that you develop by being thrown into close quarters with people. And again, we're losing that by taking the discussion online and configuring the communication medium in such a way that it basically tells us what we want to hear.
What about the actual third space that's been lost, the coffee shop, the bar, the diner? Does not having an outside place that's not work, that's not home, I mean, aside from the people who are there, does not having that place away from home and work matter at all, the physicality of it?
I think so. I don't know about you, but I tend to get cabin fever. I live in the upper Midwest, and we get snowed in. I tend to get cabin fever. But I think getting away from the confines that you occupy most of your physical space is very, very helpful. There's an effect in, Peter Trucker talked about this effect. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it says if you change the physical environment somebody's in, their productivity will go up. And they measured this by factory workers where they changed the brightness of the lights. And as they changed the brightness of the lights, whether they changed them up or they changed them down, after they were at a certain level for a while, productivity would tend to go up and then it would eventually settle down. I think there's a place for variety in your physical surroundings. And an interesting sidelight to this is that I think this is paralleled by the rise in telecommuting. You have people that have gone from three places to two places because we lost our third place, and then some people are now telecommuting, so they've even lost that second place. So we have people that really fundamentally just have one place. And how would that affect somebody personality-wise, and how long would it take us to kind of notice those effects on society as a whole?
Let's go to a caller now. We've got Nick on the line in Madison. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, nice to speak with you. So I kind of have this, I don't know if I would call it a unique standpoint. I mean, obviously, being in Madison, there are a bunch of students, and what I found when I was a student is that if I went to some places like a coffee shop, it was specific simply to get work done. I wasn't there to communicate with people necessarily. I was going to be facing a computer screen or in a book. And I kind of feel that everybody else there was in the same position. So I could either do that at home or I could do that in a coffee shop, but I always still felt the need to leave my house. Whether that be the cabin fever thing, and I think that's very much it. I tend to get very anxious if I'm at home all day and I haven't left and at least been in a place where other people are communing, not necessarily communicating, but being. And I tend to get more work done in situations like that, I guess because it made me concentrate on what I was doing instead of just saying, oh, I don't need to do this. I can do laundry also, or, you know, something like that.
Gotcha, Nick. Thanks a lot for the call. So, Dean, that's kind of that change of environment you're talking about. It reminds me of when my kids were little and there was parallel play. Like, it was valuable for kids to play near each other, even though they didn't play with each other. Is that, do we get at least something out of being isolated in an environment with other isolated people?
You know, I don't know. That'd be interesting. That'd be interesting to pursue. But I thought it was really interesting what Nick said about, you know, I plan to go to this place to get work done. So, I mean, this is what we become. We go to a place with other people in order to get work done. I mean, is it enough for us to just be in close physical proximity to other humans? I think there is some benefit to that. But we used to go to places where other people were so we would talk to them. And we used to go to these places to have communication with people. When we wanted to get work done, we would go away from these people and sit alone. And now we've kind of flipped it. And there are some people who can't work anymore when they're alone. They need to go to some place where it has some noise and there are some people milling about. And I think that's very, very interesting how society today has flipped that.
We're talking right now with Dean Barker about the death of the American watering hole and the loss of that third space. It's different from work and different from home, where communities gather and you can just show up and see people you know without making plans in advance.
You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. Do you have a place like this, or did you used to? Do you wish you did? Does social media fill the void, or do we need to be there in person? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation with Dean Barker about his piece, The Long, Slow Death of Our Watering Holes. He says that we've lost those community spaces, diners and taverns, among others, where people gather outside the home and work, where there's a built-in community of people. We know them and they know us.
You can join in if you have a spot like this or wish you did. 800-642-1234, or you can post over at the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right back to our callers. We've got Megan on the line in Green Bay. Megan, hi.
Hi, I just had the point that I'm 27 years old, and I feel that I'm the last person under, what, like maybe 40 now who doesn't have a smartphone, and also that I work at a bar, which could be one of those third places that we're talking about here, and I see even when groups of coworkers might come out to eat or get a drink after work or when friends come out, there's a group of five people, and they sit together. Like the last caller said, they just want to be near each other, but everyone has a screen in front of their face. And it's, I mean, I think it's kind of eerie and creepy that people would rather be on this invisible social internet space than be, you know, being comfortable making eye contact in that small chit-chat face-to-face.
Wow, Megan, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Dean, do you think there'd be room if, you know, a bar or diner or something said, hey, this is a screen-free environment, this is a place where you have to come and interact with other humans?
So in the article, I approached that. I said, you know, I'm going to launch a Kickstarter for a bar that has no Wi-Fi. And then someone tweeted me after the piece that went live. They tweeted me and said, this exists. And there's a bar somewhere, a coffee shop somewhere that has a sign that says, if you ask for the Wi-Fi password, we'll throw you out. and so this exists. This is a place. But when she was saying, the caller was saying that she's the only one she knows that doesn't have a smartphone, there's a really great photo essay online. It's called The Death of Conversation. And if you Google for The Death of Conversation, it'll be the top hit. But a guy took this photo essay. He just took pictures of people sitting in locations, like waiting, like sitting on a bus or whatever, staring into individual smartphones. And it's really kind of tragic when you look at it. And when you compare it to the title, A Death of Conversation, these are people who used to be talking to each other. And it's really interesting to scroll through these pictures and these people just sitting there staring into screens, like my daughter and her friends at her birthday party. This is when people used to be having conversations, and I feel incredibly hypocritical even talking about it because I absolutely do it. My smartphone is an escape from boredom. We've become afraid of silence to the point where, and I'll be on my smartphone, I'll not be doing anything intelligent. I'll be scrolling through icons of apps trying to find an app that will give me some kind of, you know, narcotic hit of amusement.
Yeah, thank you for being honest. I do the same thing, and I hate myself afterwards, but I still do it. I don't know. I'm trying to decouple. But one thing real quick before we go back to the callers that struck me about that call was, you know, eye contact. Do you think people are getting less comfortable with meeting another person's eyes to talk?
You know, that absolutely could be. I think our social skills are just gradually regressing all over. We're to the point that we think sitting there doing nothing is just kind of weird. I mean, we don't want to look stupid to sit there doing nothing, so we pull out our smartphone to kind of hide behind that thing, because the idea of sitting there doing nothing and like vaguely contemplating our position in the universe is considered strange, and we don't want to be the odd man out, so we need to find some amusement, I guess.
Let's go back to our callers. Charles is on the line in Toma. Charles, hi.
Hi. This is an interesting topic. My point, or what I was wondering, is if you looked at also the collapse of this third spot for people to go to, is also the collapse in the middle class, where people used to be on bowling teams or social societies, and instead they're worried about, you know, having two jobs or things of that nature and not feeling stable in where they are in their place in society. Besides that other caller mentioned, I heard someone say before, a coach, I think, of the Milwaukee Brewers said that this is a head-down generation.
Charles, thanks a lot for that call. I want to get Dean Barker in on this. We're uncertain, insecure economically, so we're not joiners anymore, not getting out and interacting.
You know, I absolutely did not think of that when I wrote the piece, but when it was published on Boing Boing, and for every article Boing Boing publishes, they have a companion comment thread and discussion forum, and that was one of the first things that came up, and this was absolutely not in my head at all when I wrote it. But the first thing that came up was this: we don't have time to do this. We don't have disposable income. We don't have time anymore. And this is why these things have collapsed. The idea of going home and just kind of hanging out at a bar just wouldn't occur to us anymore because we're too busy working our second job or something like that. So I didn't think of that, but the caller certainly was not the first one to come up with that association.
Thanks a lot for the call, Charles. We go next to Carol in Madison. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I think that the previous caller has a really good point. However, I do think there is somewhat of a third place in knitting stores, particularly ones that have coffee shops with them. I know that I could go into a half a dozen yarn stores in the area, and there would always be people there I knew. Not just people who work there, but people who are there.
Huh.
Okay, interesting, Carol. So people gathering around a particular interest, maybe, you know, there's that in common. What do you think about people gathering by interest, like knitting, Dean?
Okay, well, I'm going to say something potentially inflammatory, and I apologize to Carol in advance, but I would say there might be a cause and effect here, because the people who gather in knitting stores might well be of the generation prior to the internet. Knitting stores in particular, I'd say there may be an age factor there. That you're going to look at people who are probably a bit older than the average, and they're probably much more used. They come from a generation where we had these watering holes. But I absolutely do think if you group around some kind of hobby, I mean, clearly there's going to be more conversation. And that's what we found with coffee shops these days, is that you don't know if you have anything in common with the people around you. I mean, how would you even start a conversation with them? So that could be.
As we wrap up, Dean, do you see any hope for a return of the watering hole to its classic era, or like we used to see on TV?
I'm sorry, but I don't. I wish I could be more positive. But given the way things are going with mobile technology, I just don't see it going back to the way it was before. And on one hand, that's tragic, but I think as a society, it's our responsibility to forge a new path and to find some happy medium between the way things are and some kind of positive advantages of that. So I think there will be a new normal, and I think it's our responsibility to make sure it's a positive normal, not a negative one.
All right, Dean, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Dean Barker, editor at Gadgetopia and director of business development at Blend Interactive. If you head over to the Central Time Facebook page, we've got a link to his full piece. You can read it there. And on the Central Time Facebook page, you can share your thoughts on the death of the American watering hole. Make sure you're entering it while you're looking at your phone. In a public place, maybe at the coffee shop or the diner, or maybe strike up a conversation while you're there and tell us how it went.